the least true thing you were ever told in your lives was things can only get better.
Oh, that's nonsense, Maurice. No, come
no,
on.
No,
take a historical view here.
What they measure is exactly what Stalin and Mao measured. Mm. You know, what is the infant mortality rate? What's the improvement on that? Not about the meaning and the quality of a relational life.
I won Colchester for Labour for the first time in 80 years. So something about what myself and my team were doing was connecting with voters that previously that hadn't worked. So I think there's something to be learnt there from seats like mine, which we might talk about later, about how did we put progressive values into practice and persuade people to vote Labour for the first time in July. So I think that's, I mean, and I'm stand Labour Party for the whole of the left.
I was going to say, with respect, yes, Pam, it may have been carried on a national trend rather
absolutely
than local.
I would completely accept that, but I think there was also more to it than that. And I think what was the more to it than that? That's something that we might discuss. But building a pluralistic, inclusive, equal society that lives within planetary and climate boundaries is for me what the left stands for. And that's why I'm doing my part of that through the route I've taken. I know other people take different routes to do that.
Okay, well, Maurice, we've got a kind of consensus there. Do you join it?
I'm in a bit of trouble now.
Please, we want to hear the trouble.
Yeah, so I always say it's the last thing you want to hear when you go to the doctor. It's progressive. And I really love Pam, so that said, in a generous spirit, it's the problem with the progressive is the teleology, and the tin ear towards tragedy and difficulty. Okay, the least true thing you were ever told in your lives was things can only get better. Okay? It really is untrue at every conceivable level. Personal, political, cultural, every way.
Oh, that's nonsense, Maurice.
No.
Come on.
No,
it's like a historical view.
We'll come back in a second, Pam.
I think we're in an era of tragedy. I do. And the tragedy pushes up against the progressive teleology. I think we're moving into an age not of republics, but of monarchies. I think this new era is very much going to be much more on restoration. Those sets of ideas. My values are solidarity, I think is a fundamental idea, which I distinguish from the obsession of the last 40 years on diversity. I think we've got to find ways of living together in conditions of civic peace. The tradition I come from really gives a privileged position to the working class, that they are fundamental agents of not just change, but also of conservation, that they will limit this progressive madness of constant Maoist year zero human resources in university terms, teaching and learning curriculum people who just trash anything that went before. So there's a very conservative element to socialism about the preservation of the dignity of the person from the inhumanity of a utilitarian state and a commodifying market. So that's where...
Can I just pick you up on the diversity thing? Would you say diversity was not a core value of the left? Because you said it...
No, diversity is a core feature of reality.
Okay.
You know, I wanted to change the name of my university to London Metropolitan Diversity to give a better idea of what we stood for. But I didn't win that one. I should put it to a referendum in Iraq. It would have been a better outcome.
Yeah. Possibly less bloody.
More. Perhaps. But, you know what Henry Kissinger said about academic debates? They're so vindictive because the stakes are so low. And you should live it to know it. And the thing is that we were obsessed with all these matters of diversity without in any way thinking about the loss of a common life, the loss of how we live together. And the core value of my politics, which absolutely has nothing to do with the Beatles or John Lennon, is love and fellowship, how to have a life of relationship and meaning. That's the, in this desiccated, desecrated, capitalist, utilitarian world. Mm. That's really what I'm about.
Okay, Bhaskar, would you agree with broadly, I mean, there were things added on and I think taken away from what you were saying, but would you and Maurice be able to meet in that area or not?
Sure. I mean, I have a critique of the existing left and the way it's approached certain things. Of course, there's I have a criticism of the any particular tactical overemphasis. I think it all depends what we mean by these terms. So I think even diversity, for instance, of course, I don't like to emphasize diversity in part because I think it grossly overstates the difference between us. I could tell you almost exactly what it's like to be a black working class person, even though I'm not a black working class person. Why? Because I know what it's like to have a family, have responsibility, have, rent and bills to pay. I know the basic features of almost every single one of your lives, even though, we come from different places. And I think especially in a place like Britain, diversity has often been wielded into a perverse form of multiculturalism that emphasizes difference. So in other words, what I've encountered, at least off and on, I spend 3 weeks a year here. So excuse me if I'm misrepresenting some center left politics here. But you often will hear a type of multiculturalism that will, by some in the Labour Party and elsewhere, would say, you might be more, I see you're Bengali, you might be more comfortable if we just listen a lot to your this local Bengali leader who happens to be your slumlord. That'll make you really, really comfortable and make you feel represented. To me, that doesn't have a lot to do with the broad trajectory of what left-wing politics should be about, which is about preserving a better world. Now, as far as the state of the world today, I don't want to sound like Steven Pinker, but I think we see the trends are moving the wrong direction in many things. We see that climate change, for instance, might only amplify a condition of scarcity and might, for example, make right-wing politics more intense, especially as there's more waves of mass immigration and all sorts of other things. But as a whole, we're living in societies that have been profoundly changed by, in part, the influence of the workers' movement. So even a place like the U.S., as hyper-capitalist as it is, half of the U.S. federal budget is spent on Social Security and Medicare. I mean, that is like rather incredible in the broad sweep of things. And it's much more the case here and especially in the country, other countries in Northern Europe. Yeah.
Might not be for much longer, I suspect, what you're talking about in terms of the U.S. spending. But Pam, let me bring you in on that, because we had a division in a way, or you had certainly with Morris, saying that things were not necessarily going to get better. The idea that things are perhaps, that we are not progressing in that way.
I was taking a long historical view there.
Please.
That if you think about life in 200 years ago, 150 years, 100 years ago, tell people things haven't got better on life expectancy, living standards, workers' rights, and that's nonsense. Things have got better through legislative mechanisms and social movements that help to bring about those social mechanisms. So I am, call me a Weberian optimist. Pessimist.
Let me bring in on that point, because some would say, well, yes, things have got better, perhaps in some ways, because most of us have got better off.
Yes.
Wealth. Which brings me on to nicely onto the next question, which is, does the left need to deliver growth and a successful economy, and how can it address this potential challenge to its values? So I'll put that to you.
I mean, I think any political movement has to deliver a successful economy. The things that we have in this room here, many of us, I'm sure, jobs, security, a home, all those things, if we want those for other people, you need to build a successful economy. And if we're going to walk the walk on for the many, not the few, the things we have in this room, we need to reproduce for others. And that's where I think the private sector comes in. You can, of course, critique capitalism. Absolutely. I spent 25 years in a university critiquing capitalism. But the reality of this is that the state, as an enabling state, works with the private sector to create the kind of changes we need to have. We've got to have that investment from somewhere. It's going to come from borrowing, from tax, but also from private sector investment in clean energy, in green jobs, in advances in healthcare. So that partnership between the state and the market has to be renewed. It's become diminished and corrupted, all of those things, but we can't give up on that.
But you see,
there isn't another game in town.
A partnership rather than any form of control, for example.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm involved with trying to get 7,500 homes built in near my area. That involves working with a private developer that delivers a lot of affordable and social housing. And we can't do that without them. You think the post-war building boom after the Second World War was delivered by the state in conjunction with private sector. And that relationship has to be renewed. You know, I'm on the Justice Select Committee in Parliament, and our job is to hold the Ministry of Justice to account. The Ministry of Justice has 1,000 contracts with various people, including with Serco and other less extra providers. We need to hold them to account and make the best use of their resource. So for me, this is about reimagining the public realm and channeling private goods into public goods.
Okay, Maurice, do you see the relationship with a left administration, say, and the economy in that same way? I mean, what about the need to deliver a good economy as part of the things that you want to achieve or the left wants to achieve?
Well, yeah, of course, labour and the reproduction of the conditions of life is fundamental to socialism. That's like the two meanings of labour, giving birth and transforming the world. This is the meaning of labour itself. So I'm totally with that, but I just want, it's about capitalism and the acceptance of it that I need to move in, because what is it? What is it? It is the greatest, the maximum return at the fastest speed. That's what capital is. It's not like markets and all this. Capital is based, so what we had, for example, what we've lived through, let's just talk about, you know, the period of progressive globalization. We talk about what Margaret Thatcher mercilessly initiated, Tony Blair immaculately consummated. This is a period of time where capitalism was good, globalization was good. And what did it lead to? I think that's got the empowerment of the Chinese Communist Party, because all our investment went to China. China stacked with an industrial economy. And now they're a massive power with no democracy and no liberty, which is why I'm skeptical, Pam, about just measuring utilitarian metrics of life and all of that. Because if you look at 100 years ago precisely, the membership of trade unions was very high. The membership of the cooperative building society and the burial society, people belonged to things and there were some forms of association. Now we live in a much lonelier, more abandoned world. And I think that's got to be, that's why I've got this real skepticism about progressivism, is because what they measure is exactly what Stalin and Mao measured. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the infant mortality rate? What's the improvement on that? Not about the meaning and the quality of a relational life. And the voluntary nature of the solidarity, it can't be coerced. We've got to get much more. Fellowship is life is written on Walthamstow Town Hall, you know, and we should return to that. So when it comes just to,
yeah,
that was just, pardon me, I just had to say that. But when it comes to the economy, this is the most fundamental area, and we've got to recognise the big change in era that what we're living through now is industry is absolutely necessary for our liberty and our democracy. If we don't produce things, we will become a colony. We've got choices of being a colony. We could be a colony of the United States. We could be a colony of the EU. Or we could be a colony of China, which is very much supported by certain aspects of our party. But I'm saying that we have to be a national sovereign state that actually has the capacity to feed itself, house itself, and defend itself. And that is a really big, we thought we were going to, Pam, just to explain, when I say things I don't get better, we thought we were living in a world where there would be no more war in Europe. There's war in Europe.
Right. Yes.
These are realities. Now, this relationship with Ukraine to me is fundamental. Go over there and it's shocking, post-Soviet shocking. They've still got a working class and they can make things. It's really
yeah,
weird.
But Maurice, and, they have an active market. The making of things there is very much a capitalist enterprise.
Well, what I've witnessed is it's much more. I mean, I've been to Kharkiv, for example, where with the drone production, there's basically a cooperative where you could get some access to gunpowder and a 3D printer, and they do the rest in their basements. Mm. I mean, this is not at all capitalist-led...
Well, they're opting to sell them now, or trying to sell them to the US. I mean, there is the market is operating.
Yeah, well, that always happens, that you everything good we do gets bought by capital. You know, Well, look at near here, Hampstead Garden suburb was built as a homes for the poor, beautiful homes for the poor in the town and garden movement, and now they cost £4 million each, and they're all owned by lawyers. You know, this is, we have to live with the tragedy of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we stop producing. What I'm saying is absolutely necessary for industrial production is cooperation and widespread cooperation. It's not a startup or any of this internet hub nonsense. It's systematic, widespread cooperation. That's the nature of labour. It's a cooperative act.
Okay.
And what I'm saying is, and what I've seen in Ukraine is that that's real, and we have to also learn from that. So the brutal tragedy of the moment for me is that our industrialisation must be predicated on the military spending in order to support Ukraine.
Okay. Bhaskar, your thoughts on the need to produce growth and a successful economy as part of everything we're talking about?
Yeah, of course. Growth and having development models a precondition of redistribution. And wealthier societies are generally societies in which it's easier to inculcate solidarity. So I agree in theory with a lot of your critiques.
In theory.
But in practice, if you actually look at the manifest, if you look at the British economy in the last 15 years. It's, and you look at British society, again, this is purely anecdotal, but you know, 3 weeks a year times 12 years, I feel like I've been here a chunk
for
of time.
For 2 months,
See, this is why you're so against growth and these traditional metrics of exactly.
I like growth, yeah.
It's a society in which a lot of these social consensus is fraying, right?
Yeah.
A society that seems more polarized, more divided, where immigration, a lot of other issues have become more contentious and so on. I would argue much more so than in the United States, despite Donald Trump and this vanguardist right-wing regime that we have in the U.S. If you look at actual perceptions of immigration in the U.S., a lot of even Trump supporters say they want roughly the level of immigration we have now, except they want more of the immigration to be documented and they want a more secure border. The discourse is somewhere very, very else. I think some of that's America's history as a country of immigrants, but some of it is just simply that it's a wealthy country and it's a country in which the wealth divergence in both productivity, and also, I mean, the thing about the U.S. is we have better productivity than a lot of per hour than a lot of Northern Europe, and we sweat out of our labor. Everyone I know works 12 hours a day.
And you have more billionaires than anyone else.
Sure, but I think that the main feature is the political aspect. Political debate is redistribution, but of course you need fuel for the economy, and I think traditional measures of growth are actually quite useful. I think traditional measures of GDP and other features, complemented by newer measures like Human Development Index and so on, are quite useful as a baseline to understand economies. I am a socialist that believes in a socialism after capitalism. I think you probably need the market as a coordinating mechanism. You can do it through cooperatives, plus a state that does indicative planning in the way that Pam was.
So you're a socialist after capitalism. Just explain.
Yes, I'm still a traditional worker control of the means of production. I guess you guys still have clause 4. I still believe
I think
that
Labour got
literal,
rid of that. Didn't
I believe that is literal fact, and I think about how to achieve it. But in a weird way, in Britain, often the social what would be social democrats or in Britain and Labourism has been obsessed with a very peculiar growth model that doesn't even reflect what more robust social democracies had. So in Sweden, for example, at its peak, the peak of the Swedish social democracy, only around 11% of the economy was nationalized. And they did a lot of what they did through indicative planning, through centralized wage bargaining and having a powerful LO. They had a very different model of growth. I think in many ways, Britain has at times been the worst of both worlds, like status and bureaucratic, but still ultimately very unequal and with an underdeveloped welfare state. But this is kind of a wider a question. I love Britain. I'm glad to spend time here. I should say that.
But not too much time.
The food here is better than anywhere in the world. Ooh. You know, it's kind of like American Bear. America used to have the worst beer in the world, so people still think America has bad beer.
I think you've only been eating here at the food here. Which
I only eat Indian food, you know, so it's better here than India. Yeah,
let me pause you there and bring in Pam. Since you are in government.
To continue watching this video, click the link in the top left or in the description below.
With a free trial, you can enjoy the full talk and thousands more.
Thank you for being part of the conversation.